welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty for representative from Florida emerging artist, Mr. Philip Thierman. Philip, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, we're very grateful to have you. I know that you're a big champion of the arts around here. So if you want to kind of start us at the start, what gets you into the position where art starts to be this significant part of your life?
So I was somewhat thrown into this industry, but I had always wanted, since I was about 14 years old, to create something of a artist collective. I didn't know at the time what that necessarily meant, but I was in a band and in the music scene and at the early days of social networking with MySpace and the very beginning of Facebook. And it was quite interesting to me, all of the creative people who gathered to create new things. And we did a lot of things, do-it-yourself, DIY, and playing shows at fire halls and VFW halls and anywhere that young people could gather and just organize with a low barrier to entry and a low cost. So when I came to some of these universities and started working with some of the artists and meeting some of the artists, I noticed that outside of the university systems, they didn't have that much representation in the community. And at large, as a whole, they didn't have people championing them and showing them in digital spaces and telling them about opportunities. And then the drop-off between from when an art student graduates their bachelor's degree to their master's degree, when they leave the studio system, it's very difficult to understand what type of path you want to specifically take, whether that's institutional within an administration for museums and galleries, or it is going into teaching or being a full-time artist. But I think the latter, being a full-time artist, seems improbable to a lot of people who are just at that early age.
Right. So what's the road like between when you're 14 and playing in bands, and where are you at this point? You weren't in Florida?
I actually grew up in New Jersey. So my claim to fame with my band is that we played at the Stone Pony. It's where Bruce Springsteen got his start and became famous. So that was the peak for that. And after that, I was always seeking creative avenues. I did a lot in the fashion industry. With fashion startups, blogs, photo shoots, but my passion is in community organizing. So I would gather groups of like-minded individuals, and we did things ourselves. So we did photo shoots, and we just kept the knowledge sphere open, and a lot of people exchanged and met each other, which doesn't always happen outside of a system like a school or something of that. And it also allows for underrepresented communities and individuals to enter that space.
So was there any art that you were experiencing at that time, either music or fashion or fine art, that was particularly inspiring you to do this? Because that's pretty early on to have the inkling of wanting to bring a community together.
Yeah, it was mainly from the digital space, where there was this consortium of people from forums and different blogging sites, and there would be a lot of open discussion, but I always have an interest to bring anything from the digital space in person and in face-to-face. But I just had a thirst for knowledge at the time, so I gathered absolutely every publication and magazine I could get, but there's a lot of barriers to those knowledge systems.
Right.
And that's especially present in the arts. There's an establishment system that through money, relationships, and or credentials limits you for your creative expression.
What was some of the first stuff that made that scenario obvious to you?
For artists, something that I find absolutely perplexing is there's a system for submitting art to shows. It's called a call to art. Mm-hmm. And on my website, Florida Emerging Art, I gather a repository of all calls to art across the entire state, organized in chronological descending order and filtered by each city.
Dang.
So it saves people a lot of time instead of having to sift through all of the algorithms and missing things so that they could stay up to date with what's happening. And when you enter a lot of these calls to art, they have what's called a submission fee. And it's a sliding scale depending on the amount of pieces you submit. Hmm. And it usually starts off around a price of $35 and up to around $50 or $60 perhaps for up to five pieces.
Okay.
Well, when you submit to these shows, you always have to pay the submission fee. And if you don't get into these shows, the large majority of galleries, centers, they don't return that money.
Right.
And then they open it up as marketing that you can win a prize or you can be featured in the show. And that discourages a lot of young artists. Even that amount, $35, but also the lack of confidence because at such an early stage in your career, they just never take that plunge.
Right.
The large majority that I talk to.
Right. And what do you think it's just because it seems like a diminishing returns thing out of the gate, or it's a crisis of confidence because of the way the market is or what's going to be if you actually do get there?
I think it's that they don't believe in that specific institution.
Right.
They think that there would be a better way. But what I notice as an artist is they try to bring you to be conditioned to accept these established rules as orthodoxy.
Mm.
So it's strange, that number, $35. But that's generally an agreed upon amount across all different sizes and recognizable places to show your art.
And do you think that that's just like, for want of a better way of putting it, it's just the capitalist portion of the show, or this is just a gatekeeper thing to extract money from a stone?
I think it's a marketing ploy that especially when they're offering prize money, they're using the cash flow from these submissions to fund prizes, perhaps to bring on the curators and guest jurors that they bring on, that they pay. It just doesn't seem to make any sense to me why they wouldn't be able to return money to the people who don't get in.
Right.
Even when they allow you to submit five pieces and they only select three maximum, those people will be covering some costs too, which could potentially be more permissible. But it seems completely unacceptable that people who aren't accepted into the show will not get their money back.
Yeah, that definitely reeks of racket. What's the end game with that? Just to fuel the machine for the people that do get in, just so you have the prize money and the clout, and we're just going to extract it from everybody we know we're not going to give a chance?
I think it's an inefficiency. I think it's an inefficiency in the way that the gallery system operates. Coming from an outside perspective where my knowledge base is in retail and merchandising, and I've worked for very large retailers, and I've always been interested in the ins and outs of a physical storefront similar to a gallery.
Right.
Where you would be selling goods and services. And I can't understand why their margins are the way they are. So the way for art sales work in a gallery or a shop are that the gallery usually takes around 50%
right.
of the artist's sales.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the understood benefit of that would be that the artist will gain a lot of exposure, that they'll be connecting the artist's works with patrons and collectors. But I think that that service that they're providing for the artists isn't as good as it could be for the margin that they're taking. I think they need to have more transparency about exactly how the money is being used for the artists as they're entering a type of business partnership together. And the greatest resource is the artists and the creative individuals who are creating this content that is the main, it's the main attraction for all of these people to attend galleries, museums, and shops. So I think damaging the relationship between the administrative side and the artists is a huge mistake. So for my company, I'm trying to establish a very strong relationship with the artists, and I have gotten a lot of really good feedback from the artists, and they've been shocked with some of the things that I do because they're not the same as the other institutions and how they operate.
So being that you do have a fair bit of extensive knowledge in the digital portion of the show,
yeah.
when you see things like Spotify or Apple that are at like a 70-30 cut, that's even worse than your 50-50. How do you square the circle that you think it should be better than that in a physical realm where the overhead is so much more than operating a server?
I think...
Or do you think that this is just roundly artists getting bald and we should all be at more like a 90-10 in favor of the artist regardless of where we're at?
I think that the artists need to have more bargaining power and more of a presence in the conversation about what the contract looks like. Because essentially, from the very beginning, from the university system, they're conditioned to understand you're not supposed to be an artist. You're not supposed to be a full-time working artist. And even with the MFAs, which they encourage you to essentially immediately jump into after your BFA.
What's an MFA? I'm sorry.
A master's in art.
Okay. Master's in fine art. Okay, got you.
As any type of graduate program.
Got you.
A lot of them are what's called fully funded,
mm-hmm.
so you wouldn't have to pay the tuition, but there's an agreement with that in that you have to be a teaching assistant, you have to teach, and you also have to choose your area of specialization.
Mm.
So it's difficult for people to make all of those decisions. And then having left the entire studio system and not having a space many times, a lot of them stop making art completely.
Well, it is hard to go into a bargaining situation where you have little to no power other than your creativity, which you have to prove in provenance and your sales and all that.
Right.
So what avenues do you see for artists, especially emerging artists, to be able to have a little bit more clout at the table when they're negotiating these things other than, hey, this is my brick and mortar. You got nothing without me. 50-50 is as best you can do. Where is their leg up going to come from?
So one of the initiatives that I took on is that I have an online gallery on my website.
Mm-hmm.
And my website right now, I'm receiving about 600 or so visitors a month. And I have these online rotating galleries. Each month is a different theme. And right now we're averaging around over 40 artists and a little over 50 pieces of art for each month.
All Florida artists?
All Florida.
Cool.
All artists, our designation is that they would make less than 25% or less of their income from art sales.
Mm-hmm.
So they could be late stage artists or artists from underrepresented communities or people who haven't entered the art school system as well.
Right.
And they're across the entire state. And what has been really fun is that sometimes you see some quite exceptional work and they tell you, I've never had any representation at all. Not even in a small show in their small town. And also, it shows presence to some really small communities too.
True.
Outside of the major cities, which has been a lot of fun. And then given more opportunities, I've now brought on guest curators. And curators are people who design the theme of the show and then select all of the pieces of art that will be shown in that show according to the selection criteria. And the criteria is based on how closely it resembles the theme, the significance of technique in the work, and a few other substantiating factors. And a lot of these curators are juniors, seniors in college, or just recently graduated.
Very cool.
So they can get some experience doing this, and it's a very similar process as it would be in a larger institution, but they can come to apply to some institutions and tell them now that they've had some curatorial experience.
So one of the things that you're trying to do to help people give the leg up is give them experience that they wouldn't. You're eliminating some of the early stage gatekeeping.
Yeah, because that's how I started my career. Because I wanted to work in fashion, and fashion is extremely restrictive.
Right.
At one point, I remember listening to a podcast where they were talking about being recruiters at a larger fashion house. Mm-hmm. And that they would look at the zip code of individuals to see if they were of a well enough family that they would understand high fashion, couture fashion, that type of thing.
Right, which is almost equally counterintuitive as thinking art can only come from certain sectors.
Right.
So what were your initial feelings when you started to come across that stuff? Was it kind of, oh my God, what are we going to do about this? Or was it, oh my God, I'm taking this head on?
I think that there's a lot of opportunity to shift the tides and change the way that some of these institutions behave. And then also coming from the business world, I think there's a lot of opportunity to tie in people who wouldn't necessarily be supporting and or coming to those exhibitions, that shows, and bringing the community involvement to a greater extent. Because I think right now, a lot of the systems are based upon making money from artists themselves.
Right.
The smallest proportion of money that you could possibly get compared to trying to work with businesses, partnerships, sponsorships, and grants, which are such a larger sum of money.
And that you saw in the retail world as well?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you have a strong partnership with the suppliers, the merchants, the people who are creating the product, then you have a lot stronger brand as a whole. And sometimes the people who create these products, these creative pieces of artwork, they can be very selective of who they want to work with.
True.
So your reputation as an institution is incredibly important. And a lot of artists are very guarded because it's outside of just these systems that we've talked about today, there's also just a lot of predatory scams that they get on almost a weekly basis.
You're talking preying on starving artists, desperate artists, or you're talking about, for want of a better way of putting it, fraudulent art sales?
Well, preying on starving artists, fake commissions, as well as...
What do you mean by that?
There's an understood scheme that happens, especially on Instagram, where accounts will reach out to you and ask you if you would do a commission for them, mm-hmm. likely of their family or a dog or something of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty much understood that 90% of the time, it's just a scam.
Right.
And I have a few other, like four other business accounts. I don't ever receive messages like that. Right. It's only on the one specific to artists that they're sending a lot of fraudulent messages like that.
Right. Yeah. And I guess some of that is can somewhat be related to the fact that there are a lot of people in the online world that want to fancy themselves artists and don't really know what it's going to take to get into the real world. So what's some of the things you do to help the artists that you're working with get from these guarded points or these points of apprehension because they've experienced scam things or any of the litany of things you can experience when you're trying to navigate being an artist by yourself in the world? How do you get them from that point to the point where they can be more open, get something on your site, start to get to the point where they can be physically in a gallery? What's step one?
So something that I do that's very different, even for online galleries, which you would understand have a lot less overhead than a physical gallery space.
Right.
I do not charge submission fees. And my mission, and I say this publicly all the time, is my aim is never to profit off of artists.
Hmm.
I believe that I can partner and look to different revenue streams in order to support the business and bring that back to the artists. And I don't think that focusing on the smallest sum is the way to success, even for the institutions.
Why do you think they're still stuck there?
I think they're afraid to take a chance to do something different. And even the gallery systems, there's these understood practices that for someone who comes outside of the art system, I can't understand why they operate the way they do. For example, a lot of times when you go to gallery exhibitions, as someone who might want to look at art and might want to purchase some of it, you want to look at the paintings and you want to see perhaps what year it was produced in, perhaps the sizes of the painting, and maybe even the mediums used. A lot of galleries take pencil and just write a number, 7, and no other information. And that occurs from the smallest galleries all the way to Art Basel in Miami. And there's no consistency in the labeling of pieces when you go into a gallery system.
And is that something that you feel was starkly obvious to you out of the gate because of your experience in retail?
Yeah, it was immediately obvious because there's so many barriers for someone to purchase anything that if you're not providing transparency and an understanding of what they're looking at or what they might want to appreciate, they most likely will not. So I think that giving as much presence and showing the artists and the process and showing the artists to as wide of an audience will be the most beneficial. And another thing is about permanence when it comes to shows and also the digital space.
Mm.
So a lot of the artists have 2D works.
Right.
Not necessarily film, not necessarily motion. So they like to show static images on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Instagram's algorithm shows significant preference to short-form video content.
Right.
That does not bode well for artists themselves. So with my online gallery, their work is there for a month.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of artists might not necessarily have well-optimized websites.
Right. Yeah, that's a trick unto. That's a whole art unto itself.
Yeah.
So would you, is the online gallery what you want to keep building on, or is the online gallery a gateway for you to have a physical one as well?
The online gallery is a gateway to have a physical exhibition. And I have organized many physical exhibitions in the area. And I have a particular interest on community spaces and also history. So we have been having art exhibitions at this 100-year-old house here in Sarasota called the Felipe Crest Community Club.
Very cool.
It's been there since the early 1920s or so. And one of the most famous artists in Sarasota, Sid Solomon, he was floating around that area during the time, during the 60s or so. So this space 100 years ago was used as a community gathering space. And now 100 years later, we're still using it as a gathering place. So about 3 weeks ago, we had an exhibition called Postcards from Utopia, where we had 100 artists from all around the world, and they all submitted postcards with original artwork on the front and perhaps poetry, prose, or writing on the back.
Awesome.
So we displayed all of those pieces of artwork through the exhibition space, and then we had a local jazz band trio that was playing outside.
Very cool.
And they frequently have events there on weekly or monthly basis.
So you'll keep doing those things in the interim or things similar to that?
Yeah. And I also have a pretty good understanding of commercial properties and landowners.
Right.
So I would like to bring those people who need presence to their spaces, perhaps even people who are trying to rent out commercial properties, they can have art exhibitions there. It's a great way to bring a huge amount of people to view a space that's not very intrusive at all. They just need four white walls.
True. How much of your retail background, I mean, I don't mean to keep coming back to this, but I keep hearing you expressing things about this art in the art world and all the little ins and outs of it, but it seems like you've got a completely different lens you're seeing them through. And to me, it reeks of the retail world.
Yeah.
You know, you can see the advantages and the roads that can be taken where, as it sits now, they're just not.
Yeah.
Do you find that to be the case? Do you feel that way? Does it dawn on you, man, I'm so glad I spent this time in retail because here's all the keys of the castle laying in front of me and no one else notices them?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think as any creative, it's never considered incredibly cool to speak about yourself too much.
True.
So as a marketer, as a retailer, as a promoter, I have no problem to do that. And also, I find that a lot of those fears are very unfounded. Once people know about you, they can really champion you. And it doesn't matter about how many people would say disparaging things to you when you have that core team, that core foundation who's supporting you. And I think it's very intimidating and it's very personal to show something that expresses and conveys your personality, your feelings, your emotions. So a lot of young and emerging artists, they don't even necessarily want to show or sell their works.
Right.
Because they're very sensitive about who may potentially see it. And it's a very sensitive relationship that they enter in to where they would show their work.
Because we do live in a bit of an increasingly hypercritical world. And we also, I mean, maybe it's just me, but it just does seem like we're living in a world where everybody wants to be a creative in some form or fashion now. So do you find that a lot of these emerging artists have apprehension not only because of, for want of a better way of putting it, the way the world is around them, or it's this own imposter syndrome thing that's creeping up? And that's why they get nervous. They don't want to find out that they're the imposter they're afraid they are, when really no one is and we're all making it up.
I think it's a combination of both. And I mean, there is so many barriers to entry. It's one of the more expensive university degrees to go after as a whole. And the artists feel that pressure. They feel the pressure of this significant investment that I'm making.
Mm-hmm.
Am I ever going to make it to have a career in the arts? And that's why, in the pragmatic sense, a lot of emphasis is put on arts teaching.
But right.
From what I see, a lot of the arts teaching, you just become more into the education sector rather than being necessarily a full-time artist. And some of the best art teachers that I have met and seen were full-time artists who then became teachers. They didn't become a teacher and then a full-time artist. It's too difficult to create artwork when you have that high of a stress of a job. It's one of the most difficult jobs, I think, and the most underappreciated jobs is being a teacher.
Yeah. Yeah, I can go along with that too. I've got teachers in the family, and my hat's off to them roundly. So what's some of the stuff that helps these people who have fine art degrees come out and not be lost? Because fine art, like you said, this is a treacherous road to walk. And if you're leaving school with, I know people that have fine art degrees where they have six figures in it, and that's a long road to make that money back. And they end up being graphic artists, they end up, you know, doing lettering and all types of obscure jobs. And my personal horse in the race is that I feel like we all suffer when we lose the fine art, because we all need it, we just don't know it yet. But what's some of the avenues that can keep these people able to be artists? Because I know that's what you're spearheading.
I think it's more accessibility to exhibiting, more accessibility to resources, partnership with individuals who want to support financially, with presence and champion the artists, and understanding what the institutions and positions mean for your later stage in your career. So some of that would entail that they network and they meet with these people who are later in the stage of their career. And a lot of them don't leave their university areas because that's where their whole studio system is.
Ah.
So I've brought with me artists to different shows and shown presence. And I've built a very strong knowledge base for Florida of where things are headed and what trends are happening in the art world and what university classes are very strong. So I tried to give some knowledge share to those people whom I connect with. And also I hope that I save people time, because artists and creatives should not be spending their time making posts and figuring out how to make the most successful marketing online.
Amen.
There should be partnership with individuals and appreciators of the arts to help them, to champion them, to be successful, to spend time doing what they're best at.
Ugh, I couldn't agree with you any more than that. What's the modern day template for that look like? Because I know, or I'm relatively familiar, back in the day, you used to be able to find a collector or someone that would buy your work and champion your work, and it would help you and it would establish your provenance and things like that. How do you go about that now? Do you personally try to connect collectors with emerging artists who are making pieces that may be in their vein? Or what's kind of the groundwork to make the old ways work in the new world, in new ways?
I think that there needs to be as much visibility as possible, and you need to invite a very wide set of people who may become patrons. And this is also education for individuals about why art is valuable for putting in your living room and seeing it every day, how that can provide inspiration and emotion and bring out a room, that sort of thing. And a lot of the commercial side is very separate from the institutional creative side.
Right.
They consider it, it's considered something that wouldn't be the path that they would prefer, that they would be selling at fairs and to the mass public.
Right.
They would like to maintain, to show their works to the most exclusive collectors and the people who are established collectors. And within that collector system, there's a whole system of middlemen.
Right.
And secondary markets. And in secondary markets, the artists don't get any profits.
Right. And this was kind of the impetus of the NFT thing. Yeah. The original person that makes it gets 10% forever, because in the old days you sold your painting and they resold it and you got squat along the way.
Right.
Do you think that there's a way that that changes? Or what's the road forward look like for that, you think?
It wouldn't be any differently than royalties for television and film and music. The galleries could establish contracts with the artists where the artists would be supported from secondary markets in whatever capacity.
Yeah, I could see that being a tangled web, but definitely one of the things that's unique to the fine art world, because unlike an album, as it were, you can sell more copies as time goes on, but it inherently doesn't become increasingly valuable in its market value.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same price as it was in the 70s. We count for inflation, whatever.
Right.
It's not like we have a painting that's now worth an untold sum of money that at one point just wasn't.
That happens all the time.
Yeah, actually. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
In the art world, it happens.
Yeah.
So you can't, you there's got to be some way to, plus you have the whole posthumous part of it too. What would you do for, you know, you'd have to be settling something to Van Gogh's estate. You know what I mean? How that's such a tangled web, but I see how that would be necessary, because in other disciplines of art, you just can't have it. You have to be paid in perpetuity.
Right.
Or you at least have to negotiate it up front.
Well, the way that artists of the past had supported themselves is a lot of them would make small miniatures or drawings or portraits in order to support their other works.
Mm. So do you still, I guess that's kind of the modern equivalent of graphic design and things like that, huh?
Yeah, something of that sort, or just commissions as in general. That's another avenue where artists can have more independence on controlling themselves as an entrepreneur.
Do you still see having to make those choices as being detrimental to the core fine artist who exists in this scenario?
They do feel that way, because they feel that they could be stifled by not being able to express themselves as freely as they could.
Right.
And they couldn't even have the self-discovery to understand what works are most appreciated by their collector base, their public.
Right.
Because there's just not enough impetus, not enough shown at the beginning of their careers. That's why most of the artists only sell very expensive works after they've died.
Right. That's such an interesting scenario. So your real goal with Florida Emerging Artists is to kind of upend that.
I would like to open the arts to as many people as possible, because having art shows in places that are not typically art spaces invites people and brings less aversion to people who don't consider themselves artsy, which I hate that term. Because a lot of people will never enter a museum.
That's crazy. Yeah,
so
I suppose that's true.
They should bring the art to the people. That's how I feel.
So do you think that doing things like, we just had like a little art exhibition here outside, do you think that those types of things cheapen that when they just try to do it anywhere you can? Or is it more about anywhere you can is good enough, and if we can curate a nice environment like this Philippi Creek place you're talking about, then that's just bonus points?
I think it's just about the quality of the community of the arts and the quality of the curation. I think no matter what, if you see a good piece of art, as some of the artists in the Paris communities where Van Gogh was, and they were selling art in bars and on the streets, or selling sketches on right. the streets. I don't think that having art in public places would cause art to cheapen it. And in Florida, we have a history of that, actually.
Right.
There's artists at, and they're exhibited right now at an unbelievably important exhibition at Sarasota City Hall with the Florida Highwaymen. And they're a group of landscape artists who are African-American who were selling artwork on the highways, on the roads. And now they have significant prominence. Their works are considered an important piece of history and an important piece of art history.
Very cool. You touched on it a little bit. We do have a lot of art in the DNA, especially in this area. Is that what drew you here?
There is something different about Sarasota from its original inception.
Right.
So Bertha Palmer, who was a business magnate from Kentucky who moved to Illinois, who married an older gentleman, and she came into great wealth, is the individual who developed Sarasota. She established the agricultural business and industry here in Sarasota. And she also was considered almost like royalty at the time.
Hmm.
She even met with the Queen of Spain. And then you have John Ringling,
right,
who was a businessman from Wisconsin who worked in the circus, but he wanted to be considered sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
And he purchased a large sum of Italian Baroque paintings. So these two socialites, these two people, they brought a lot of creatives to the area.
Right.
And without those individuals doing that over 100 years ago, this area wouldn't be the way it is. And there has always been an appreciation for the arts here as long as I've been coming here.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's just I'm curious what your thoughts are about where we're at now. And I think I know where you want us to get going. But I know some of our, you know, when I first started coming here, this very much seemed like a circus town to me. You know, you could still, I lived over where there were still circus performers that wintered here and they would do their tightrope stuff in the yard and stuff. And I really loved that as being creative myself, moving here. That was a big part of what drew me here. But now it doesn't seem that way so much to me anymore. Do you feel that way? Or do you think that it's just been pushed at the underground and when you start bringing things up, we're going to start to feel that all over again?
I think that different places at different periods of time have energy. And right now, I feel Sarasota does have that energy. Because ever since those two individuals came here, Bertha Palmer traveled the whole world, but she felt that the Bay of Sarasota was one of the most beautiful places she ever saw.
Right.
And there has been this boom of young people moving here mm-hmm. in the past 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
The average young individuals I meet are mostly 22 to 25 years old. And everybody has the same thought that they want something better to happen here.
Yes. Yeah, that does seem to be a little bit more of a groundswell now than points in the recent past anyways.
Yeah, I think it just depends. The most difficult part for creators is the larger institutions. So for Sarasota nightlife, it's property owners.
Right.
For artists, it's studio owners and gallery owners.
And what do you think the big hurdle with that is here? It's just that we got too much of a good old boys club, or there's just too few galleries and owners? What's the hurdle there at the moment?
I think it's difficult to gain funding and be financially sustainable
as the gallery or the artist?
As the galleries.
But we have a fair amount of established galleries around here.
Yeah.
Do you think that they are – do you think that they are hindering, hurting, or just a push on the scene right now?
I think that they are doing well now, and it has a lot to do with how much presence the public sees from the galleries. So right now, luckily, on Palm Avenue and this didn't happen in coordination, but there's about four galleries in a long row on the same street. That really helps all of their business, because when they have First Fridays or art walks, people can travel to all of the different galleries, and you have a much greater chance that they'll buy their first piece. And I would presume that once someone buys their first piece of art, they'll probably continue purchasing art.
Yeah, for sure. It is a fun experience.
Yeah.
We've got a fine artist in the family here. Our D.L. Steiner is a very good friend of mine, and he's kind of what got me into the gallery portion of the world. So I'm still learning a ton about this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm very curious about – it just seems like a lot of things. It's in a state of flux right now. You know, so I guess I'm most curious what you think the next best step is, or what the most likely next step is for you guys as Florida emerging artists, and what you plan to see from that next step.
One big thing I'm working on is getting grant writing and bringing in more opportunities to feature galleries, to show presence to galleries, to increase their foot traffic, to increase their sales at galleries, so that I can partner with galleries and bring in some income stream for my business that I can then use to promote the artists.
And get that physical exhibition space.
Yeah.
So do you think that, and I hate to go back to this one, but it hits me every time you say it. Do you think when you see these galleries that have these missed opportunities, it's because you see a finely functioning retail environment that this is not?
I think that gallery spaces can be extremely integrated into many public buildings and a lot of spaces where the physical businesses could profit generously from. There's a lot of coffee shops, for example, that have a lot of wall space, and that wall space would be so well used to exhibit local artists or different artists, and then it's another excuse for someone to walk into your business.
Very true. So you're talking about not necessarily repurposing, but adding additional uses to existing spaces.
Yeah, I think so. And also it helps to educate people on what is art and why art is important.
What do you think the biggest hurdles are there? Because those are loaded questions. Those are loaded stances. What do you think the biggest hurdle is for people there? Is it because from an outsider's perspective, you know, when you get into the fine art world for non-art appreciators, it starts to be pretty homogenous pretty quickly. It's all the same. It all looks the same, whatever. So how do you get somebody from the point where they're just glazed over at art to being able to appreciate it a little bit more?
You introduce it to them at earlier ages. You have it be in their present more frequently. One thing that I have seen here that I quite like is places of worship that are using some of their halls for art exhibitions. It's a great idea. I know that potentially some foot traffic to smaller churches or temples is lower, and perhaps they're having difficulties of how to gain young people's attention to attend some of these spaces, and inviting events like that is a great opportunity. And then library spaces, where again, I am a lover of libraries and I frequent them often, but I don't see a lot of people sitting in them as third places or places to spend time for community engagement and gathering. And I've always had this issue in the States of not having not having gathering places for young people or people to meet each other in general. And in the 70s and 80s, it was malls, but
right.
No, I know about retail, and people just go into malls now to mainly go jogging and that sort of thing.
Right.
The space is just not utilized as well as it could be.
Yeah, and there's plenty of abandoned mall spaces happening even more so. Amazon snapping those up. That's the last thing we need. So what's the end goal is to get some gallery spaces, get some more people out here, but what is the thing that you would like to see most from an art appreciation standpoint? People being able to sit and just appreciate it again? Do you think we just need to get to that spot where we got the headspace to appreciate art?
I think we need to consider making art as an important tool in expression and ideation for people who might not even be classically trained. Because in the past, that was how it was. Even at the university systems, a lot of professors were not classically trained.
Hmm.
And it's just very therapeutic as a whole. It's a whole way to get ideas and take things that you have great questions to. I feel that you go into a museum and you look at a painting,
mm-hmm.
and that's where you can find existential thoughts and questioning about human condition and different things like that. And different pieces of art will always speak to people differently. And a lot of artists don't like to put titles on works. And I understand why now, because they like that people interpret their art differently.
Do you find that anything else can do that for humanity, or that's art's lane?
I think it's poetry, which I think is incredibly important. I think it's literature, which has been so impactful that it started whole wars and movements.
Facts.
And I think it's artwork, because even with the biggest companies in business now, they were started by significant creatives such as Apple, and perhaps you can say someone like Elon Musk, who creates a lot of different products and companies. It's very important to support the creative arts.
Because you think that helps people have the foundation of possibilities in their thoughts still?
Yeah, it helps people be freer. It helps people communicate in a way that they can express themselves better, where perhaps I feel people are getting more isolated, especially from the digital.
Mm-hmm.
And I was off social media for like 7 years, and I work in digital marketing, so that was not an easy feat.
Yeah, I shouldn't think so. Good grief. I'd like to be off it for 7 days. Man, that had to be an interesting case study. What did you feel like when you came back to it?
I felt like I still did all the same things I did when I didn't have it that I do when I do have it now. And just in different paths, different avenues. And because you think about all the possibilities that you create on these digital spaces, but if you were never on them, you wouldn't ever think about that.
Very true.
You would just be living and appreciating things as they come and things closest to you, that sort of thing. Because there's a great risk in the digital space that you can get lost in the intimidation and fantasy of people who are more successful for you, for example. And it's frequent for that to happen for young people.
Yeah, and I imagine in the art world too, not just exclusive to music, but it's hard to resist that feeling of competitive nature when you see somebody else, when really it has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
So when you do digital marketing, you used an interesting term there. Do you look at that as creating digital opportunities? That was you said that. That really struck me.
Yeah, I think so, because I like to use I'm not shy about speaking up about specific topics and speaking to people and being transparent. I suppose that's tantamount to myself being a millennial. I'm very prototypical, but a lot of times on the social medias, you can ask people who you would never be able to approach questions and they might answer you. I think that's very powerful.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I guess making the world smaller in some regard, but more vague, I guess that was the trade-off.
Yeah.
Man. Well, let's get you out of here on something fun instead of something so heavy.
Sure.
Can you remember when you saw the piece of art, whatever it was, a poem, a painting, that impacted you most and really got this fire so cemented in you that you've carried it through all your iterations, being in a band, being in retail, and now
right.
using everything to champion the next round?
I think being that I love music so much, I would go to a show sometimes and there was a band that would be playing and sometimes there was no one in the crowd. And as a 15, 16-year-old musician, I completely understood that. But they would still give the same exact performance that they would give for five people that they'd give for like 20,000.
Nice.
And that's incredible. And the feeling of emotional rush that you get when you're watching one of your favorite bands, it feels like you could do almost anything when yes. you're watching them like that.
Yes, sir. I'm with that.
Yeah.
So you were able to carry that power forward.
Yeah, I think so.
That's really awesome. Well, man, I appreciate you doing that. I appreciate
you so
coming
much.
Down here and talking to us.
Yeah, it was fun talking.
I can't wait till we do this again. I would love to hear
absolutely.
About when we get some new exhibits up, when you got a physical thing, anything
sure.
you got promoting, we're definitely in on it. And,
wonderful.
And the world needs more people championing the arts. So, Philip, thank you so
much,
my
much.
Friend.
Thanks for
thank
taking
you, brother.
The time to talk
yeah,
about.
Anytime.